The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30.
John Gibbons, do you think it's the European Union scaling back on its environmental ambitions?
Good evening, Matt. Yeah, this is really, really bad news. I mean, essentially, it's really a full-scale retrenchment of what had been a whole series of package of progressive measures. We had the Green New Deal, we had the Nature Restoration Law, and we really had, in the sort of time frame of 2019 to 24, because the European Union organised itself in these five-year blocks, really climate action and the greening agenda was very strong in Europe. And of course, 2019, if you cast your mind back, that was the year of the student protests. And that really set the political mood across Europe, which is basically, we really need to get real about climate action. Now, 2024 is a
very different... We have the farmers' protests.
You're absolutely right.
So equal democratic right to express a point of view.
Absolutely. So we've gone from having, you know, teenagers peacefully protesting on the street to people basically in very large tractors attacking the police, cutting down trees, setting fire to things.
That's a very pejorative way of describing. Much of the farmer activism is nothing near as violent as that, or violent at all. It could be peaceful protest as well.
I know, but unfortunately, over the last couple of months, it's been anything but. We had, for example, serious car accidents where manure was dropped in the middle of motorways and cars crashed into it. It's reckoned three people were killed as a result of these actions in France, Matt. And the reason, by the way, that you haven't heard about it is that the media doesn't react hysterically to farmer protests, even when they turn violent. On the other hand, get a teenage climate protester to throw a can of soup at a glass sheet in front of a painting, and we all lose our you-know-what. So there's a complete double standard here, and I think it's incredibly unfortunate. But essentially, this new phase of the European Union, the 24 to 29, is now being shaped, and we have this through this leaked draft, what's called a strategic agenda. And basically, climate action has now been relegated to what they call an adaptation, right? So they've taken it out. The word sustainability, Matt, has completely disappeared from the document. And on agriculture, what we used to have was agricultural sustainability. That is now called food security through a vibrant agriculture sector. They have deliberately excised the notion that agricultural sustainability and the greening of agriculture and biodiversity protection and climate protection, they have been excised. It's an incredible step
backwards. But the officials and the politicians clearly have been listening to the people. They are gauging the public mood just like they gauged the public mood in 2019. They're gauging it now.
I think you're right. I think the mob has spoken. The mob has threatened the police.
What's the difference? There was a mob in 2019, there's a mob in 2024. If you want to call people expressing their democratic views mobs.
Okay, well, let's agree to differ on our terminology. If both of them had been equal in their methods, I would agree with you, but they haven't. What we've seen this time is intimidation. Not just, by the way, of public officials, but of police. And I've seen.
Okay, but what difference will it make eventually?
Okay, what this all boils down to basically is, let's go back to 2023 briefly, right? Europe had its hottest year on the recorded record, basically going back, the instrumental record, going back as far as you like. We had serious drought, heat waves, extreme flooding events right across Europe. Southern part of Europe, Matt, food production tanked in many places. We're now getting to a point where large areas, swathes of Europe, are basically struggling to produce food. Now, at a time like that, this is nature's way of saying, guys, we need to really ratchet up action on climate change because we're losing the war, we're losing this. Now, I mean, I would say this, that the farmers' organisations, and it's led by a group in Europe called Copa Cogia, and groups like the IFA are affiliated to them, right? They're the farmers' union. They, in turn, tend to take their instructions, if you like, from the agri-chemical PLCs and from the agri-PLCs. What they're doing, essentially, here is the equivalent of... basically, turkeys voting for Christmas. The idea of the agriculture sector, the most exposed, the most vulnerable sector in Europe to climate change, actually sabotaging climate action. This is an act, Matt, of self-harm. This is a sector that is already... You ask Irish farmers how they're doing this year. Many of them are underwater. The tillage farmers haven't been able to get into their fields. Cattle haven't been out since last September. Hello, folks. The climate is changing radically before our eyes. Now, if you think you can address this by getting angry, by threatening police, by smashing up the place, and by somehow getting a bunch of right-wing politicians to bring in refractory and negative climate action, or basically on destroying climate action, what you're doing is you're taking away from the European Union the very tools that we need to stop climate change.
Well, then tell us about what happened at the European Court of Human Rights this week when there was a case taken by Swiss female climate activists. They've been called the Swiss Grannies.
That's right, Matt. This is a group, it's a better news, let's say. This is a group of over 70s women in Switzerland. And they've made the point that people in their age group, specifically women and older women, are much more likely to die as a result of heat waves. And their case to the European Court of Human Rights is that the Swiss government hasn't done enough to meet its climate obligations. They took that case and they were successful. And this is reckoned to be a landmark case. Now, two other cases, by the way, were taken, similar cases to that, including Portuguese children, and they were unsuccessful, but largely for technical reasons. And I would say, by the way, most cases that are taken to the European Court of Human Rights lose. 90% of them are rejected. So to actually get a win like this is incredibly important. And I might say, Matt, as well...
But what impact will it have?
Okay, I think the key impact...
See, the reason I ask that is if the European Union is scaling back on its environmental ambitions, will that be changed by this court decision?
Well, what I think is super interesting is that while the European Union, or parts of the European Union, and of course Ursula von der Leyen, I should never complete a description of the walk back of progressive measures in Europe without referencing that woman who has basically single-handedly, apart from her catastrophic intervention in Gaza, has also been the woman who scrapped pesticides regulations. So she'll make sure that more and more people die prematurely right across Europe and that biodiversity collapse accelerates. But to your point, right, what this European court ruling opens up is the opportunity for people in countries like Ireland, right across Europe, to take their own national governments to court with the EHCR ruling under their arm and say, well, you're not doing enough. You're not protecting me. So what this is critically important, Matt, is it has opened it up. And I would say as well, there's an interesting little Irish footnote to this particular Swiss Grannies case. And that is that when this was first taken, which was last April, only part of Switzerland defended it in person, but only one other country in Europe sent a legal team to defend against this case. A high part team of five Irish lawyers were sent over on the advice of the Irish Attorney General's office, if you don't mind. So we spent a huge amount of time and a huge amount of effort fighting the Swiss Grannies case.
Well then, tell us about the Feminist Communities for Climate Justice, which I believe is a joint project between the National Women's Council of Ireland and Community Work Ireland, and a report that's come forward from the Department of Social Studies at University College Cork.
That's right, Matt. The key finding here is that what we might call minority groups, and I know you can't exactly call women a minority group representing 50% of the population, but in terms of, I suppose, access to power and access to influence, they would form that. And what this study established is that we have an absence of both women and marginalised communities in the decision-making space around climate action. And it also means, for example, we've got very little gender-specific data with which to work. And many of the most vulnerable communities, and by the way, this is not just a case in Ireland, but right across the world, far more women and children, I might add, live in poverty than men do. So therefore, climate change hits poorer people much harder. They have less resources and less resilience. So part of the focus of this Women and Climate Conference is to basically, if you like, redress the balance and say, look, we need to put specific measures in case to protect vulnerable groups, whether it's travellers, the disabled, older people, people in refuge, and indeed women generally, who are more vulnerable and more exposed. And as I say, Matt, in many cases have less resources, which makes them less resilient to setbacks.
So do we need an Irish Grannies to join the Swiss Grannies?
Well, the door is open now. I will say that the door is wide open. That we have made the case has been made at a European level that you need, if you feel your government isn't serious about climate change, then you should get to court. Take them to court, as they say.
John Gibbons, thank you as ever.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.